Welcome to The Pen That Writes, a podcast where we will talk to authors about their lives beyond the books and stories that their environment wrote for them. My name is Ayan, and I am your host for this series, where we will be in conversation with your favorite authors and ask questions that explore entirely new themes. Today we have with us an author of 15 novels. Yes, 15 novels. From self-help to crime to historical fiction, there isn't a genre you won't find in her work. She has traveled to more countries than I've been to cities and has been writing since before I was born. None other than Tanushree Poddar. Hello ma'am, how are you today?
Hi Ayan, I'm very happy to be with you. I'm very fine, and hope the same for you and everyone out there.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I hope you're excited as well.
Yes, of course. And I'm happy to be here. And I'm here with all the answers that you would seek from me.
Yes, that's great. So let's get right into the show. Let's talk about the time. Before you were an author, you worked in the corporate sector for 8 years. And 8 years, well, for me, that's basically half my life. And then you quit. Tell me about your life as a corporate worker. What did you do, and what led to you eventually just leaving and becoming a full-fledged author?
I was working as an HR professional with Larsen & Toubro Limited. And it was a job which I didn't mind doing. It was quite nice and exciting. And I quite enjoyed myself till I discovered there was a thing that, you know, could work better for me. So you can say that I chose to quit the corporate scene to follow my dream because I have always been writing as a freelancer. And I have been, you know, contributing to various magazines, newspapers, and other, you know, whatever media I came across, including a short skit for AIR, All India Radio. So basically, you know, it was something that I thought would give my life a better purpose instead of, you know, being locked in the corporate, you know, scene for a long time. I just wanted to, you know, go and live my dream, and which is what I'm doing.
That's amazing. I mean, you seldom see stories where people break out of the corporate sector and, you know, follow their dream. And when you see them, all the stories are just, you know, brilliant. And it's really inspiring to see as a young person who is planning to get into the corporate sector himself.
Then I'm the wrong person to ask that question.
No, it's great. It's great. You know, the fact that you can eventually break out of it. It's not that you have to stay in it for, you know, maybe 20, 30 years and keep on working your way up. And as you described, I mean, it is kind of a rat race at the end of the day. But yeah, let's see what happens. Let's see what the future holds. Let's talk about history. I think society right now is a bit sketchy on it. We have the Oaks theory on the Taj Mahal, then we have the whole Ram Mandir fiasco, which I don't want to get political. But as a history buff, do you think that the lack of historical education has something to do with this?
Honestly, I think history has been changed according, you know, to the feelings of the rulers. Whenever, wherever you find a regime wanted the history to be represented in a certain manner, it has played around, given it a new twist. So each person, each regime, each government tries to suit the narrative to their own benefit. And that's why history has so many changes. Some of them are totally untrue. But what has happened is when the British came to this country, they had their own perspective. about this country, and they gave our history their favorite color. Now, which may or may not have been the truth. Then thereafter came democracy. Our country was liberated. And then we tried to, you know, stick to those. So if you see, much of what we know comes from what the British writers had written. Now, we have very little authentic, you know, literature, which only few, like Jadunath Sarkar, he's a historian, Sir Jadunath Sarkar. His books on Mughal history are really fantastic. Because even in the court, when they used to have these scribes making notes and writing down books and things like that, they were actually more favorable to the ruler because these people wanted to please the king. So you really don't know how much of it was true. So each person has been left to derive his own conclusion to a certain extent. And probably when you come to education, what we read on in our textbooks is what we are told is the truth, but we don't know for sure.
So according to you, what would be, you know, if I were to research about historical accounts, and since you said the people who are, you know, writing and taking accounts in the court of the rulers were a bit favorable to the rulers, because let's face it, it wasn't a democracy and you don't want to risk anything.
You naturally don't want to lose your head.
Exactly. So
you want to be rewarded.
So what would be a reliable source? Are there any reliable sources at all?
See, what I would say is that when I do my research, I consult all kinds. I don't stick to one historian or one set of history books. I generally tend to, you know, explore the entire range that is available. And right from the British historians to the Indian historians, and, you know, some of them also have a little bit of, no, what I mean is that you have to also refer to the court scribes, because after all, much of what we know has been derived from there. So when you sit and read all of it, you naturally get a picture which may be a little different from what you know, you thought, but then you have to piece together and then realize that what could have been the situation, right? As a fiction writer, you can take several liberties, not that you change history, which I would never do, but your own expressions can also, you know, lead to a different kind of story, keeping in keeping the facts in mind, right? So you fill up the gaps,
of course,
basically, of the information that is lacking from your resources. I'll just give an example. See, now a lot of books are being written on mythology. If you have seen, there's a spate of books on, say, Draupadi, okay, for instance. Okay. Now, Draupadi as a character, what do we know about her? We know from various books only. Some of them are, you know, epics. Some of them are written by, you know, writers in the later periods. And there'll be a lot of differences because each writer would be giving it her own color or his own color and interpreting the story in a different format. But all of them are interesting. Though you don't know really what Draupadi was like. So it is very much, you know, a part of author's imagination plus some facts. Right. Any book for that matter depends a lot on the imagination or the take of the writer who's interpreting the entire lot of resources that he or she has at disposal.
So, I mean, it's just the sheer thought of researching so much scares me, which is
ironic. Well, it is a very laborious process, and it is laborious, let's say.
Yes.
Period. See, I have been one of my favorite, you know, writers is Philippa Gregory. Okay. She writes about Tudor history mainly. And if you read her books, you can make out that she has lent a lot on imagination, apart from the facts. Because each book, like the one I was reading recently, was 500 of fine print material. Now, I'm sure there's so much of that where she has, you know, depended on her imagination. So you have to be imaginative and combine research and fiction in a very, blend it so well that people take it for, you know, they assume this is the truth.
I see you applying this method yourself, because I have been reading Escape from Harem, which I love, by the way. It made me feel uncomfortable and gave me hope, and somehow it made me feel the emotions of a 15-year-old slave girl in the Mughal Empire hundreds of years ago. And I want to ask you, how long does it take, like, tentatively, how long does it take to conduct this type of research from, you know, the social hierarchy to the culture that existed then? How long does that take?
It takes a lot of time, because, see, you are not writing just about the person. It's not just the character. You're creating an entire world around your characters.
Exactly.
You're creating a story. So you have to know what they ate, how they lived, how they traveled, what they wore, what festivals they celebrated, you know, whole lot of things, what kind of wars were happening, battles, and how did they deal with various issues? Because life was quite dangerous for some people, especially on the throne, with, you know, intrigues and plotting and whatnot happening behind every pillar. So how did they deal with it? You have to imagine and set up a whole dream world and then dive into it. So it takes a long time. Firstly, you have to find out about that era in totality. If I'm writing Escape from Harem, for instance, I have set it in the time of Shah Jahan and Jahangir, right?
Yes.
My father and son. So I have to know what was happening at that time. And you have to be true to the dates and the events that you cannot change and you should not change. If there was a battle at a certain time, in a certain place, and whoever was the victor, you cannot change that fact. That is there. It is a gospel truth. What you can change is, you know, your characters may include some real, some imaginative ones, some fictional ones, right? So that much you have the liberty to change. You can incorporate your own fictional characters within the authentic ones. So it takes a very long time. In fact, historicals are some of the toughest challenges for a person to write.
Yeah, I mean, it's as good as programming an entire world, because I understand what you're trying to, you know, explain. Obviously, I couldn't do it myself. If I was told to write something like that, because when you said you have to create an entire world, you did, because in Escape from Harem, you have this entire Mughal culture. You have those, you have described the entire harem so well. You have those little apartments, you have the social hierarchy that is present, from the wives to the concubines to the kinesis, and each, you have even described the guards that were at each level of the harem, like the inner guards, who were the women, who were the strong Uzbek women, if I'm not wrong. Then there were the eunuchs, who were, you know, trusted with many people. And then there was the Rajput guards at the end. And you know, you also described how at night everything is closed, how if someone is to be let into the harem, there is a lot of evaluation. So when you created that whole world, it was like, not only that you created a world that we were supposed to dive into, but I felt when you were while reading it, it's like you're coming around me, and you're brick by brick putting me inside this little house, little world of yours, and then you're forwarding the plot, which is so, you know, I have to say it's brilliant in its own way. It's beautiful. how you manage that. And I honestly, I loved, I am loving Escape from Harem. I haven't read the whole book yet, but as much as I've read right now, I am hooked, and I'm definitely gonna finish this as soon as I, you know, get time from college assignments.
Thank you so much, Ayan. I think, a book does well when a person, a reader, feels that way. You have to create that world for him so that he can get lost in it. And to do that, you need to depend a lot on the research. The harem part of the book was totally researched over a long period of time by me. So that you knew about the darogas who ran it and how it worked and how the information traveled from one place to the other and things like that. So that part has to be authentic. You cannot fictionalize that part.
So you spent a lot of time traveling around because of the military background that you have. Your husband is in the military. And I assume you traveled in general as well. Which is one place that you could visit time and time again and still be awestruck by the sheer beauty of it?
There's so many places. I couldn't, I was a travel writer.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you know about it.
Yes,
I was a
yes.
travel writer and I traveled on the invitation of various tourism boards from across the world. And
Oh.
I have traveled to more than 35 countries. So there are places where I have gone more than once and twice and maybe five, six times. Switzerland is one such place. They kept inviting me and I kept writing about them. But having said all that, I loved being in Istanbul. I just
Ah.
loved the vibrancy and there's something about the place. And also Greece. I think Greece, it has a lot to do because I have read so much about the history and everything. It was fascinating.
Yeah. I mean Greek mythology. I mean, come on,
Yeah,
like what
so if
else?
you go to Parthenon and stand there, you really sit, but as you just get into a dream world where you can imagine the Grecians and holding court and Socrates and Cicero and all that,
Yeah.
and those places where they used to discuss philosophy. We have gone to those places, we've seen those, and it's a different world altogether,
Yes, agreed. I feel Greek architecture in general is on a tangent of its own. I mean, you see the European architecture, you see the transitions from a country to country, you see a few similarities here and there. But Greek architecture in general is just so unique and so brilliant.
It is, magnificent and mammoth. The size itself is breathtaking of each hall that you enter. It's like a structure made to impress.
Throughout the years, I mean, you have traveled a lot. I mean, 35 countries, and then there was also traveling across India. And you have probably more stories to tell than most people. But I want to ask, what is the most important lesson or most important takeaway that you feel you have inherited from your adventures in general?
I personally feel that there's a saying that you have not done anything unless you have traveled, and traveling is the best educator. You can read
Right.
as many books as you want, but you'll not learn as much as you can learn in a single travel. And that's so true. It widens your horizon to such an extent, you realize what a little insignificant person you are in this vast world of such superlative wealth of architecture, beauty, everything, culture. And you really realize that, one must travel to learn about the world. No book can do justice to what is like, seeing with your own eyes. So I have learned to, love traveling, which I always did. But it has made me so much more, awakened and prouder of the fact that there is a world which exists beyond our country and which is so good. so nice and so enrapturing, you know. It's really different.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I agree. Traveling has that effect on people where you realize how insignificant and how small you are. And not only you as a person, but then you realize how insignificant and small these petty political debates and, wars that we're having. You realize at the end of the day, this is one world. And
Exactly.
out of eight bloody planets, out of eight bloody planets, we are the only one with life, and yet we have disputes over borders and we're trying to kill each other and everything. And you realize, because personally I found this, I realize this feeling every time I'm in a plane. And I mean, it's been a while since I've been in one, but every time I'm in a plane, I look down at the clouds and I realize I can't even see a little house. I can
Exactly.
just see the roads, the greenery, and everything, but I can't see a single person. It's not even as big as an ant for me right here. And you realize that
Absolutely.
the sheer,
Magnitude.
exactly, the sheer magnitude of the universe, and we are that, maybe we are that one planet with life on it, and we are just messing it up in general. We're doing it all
Absolutely.
wrong.
Now you realize how much climate change matters.
Exactly. So yeah, that has been our time, and that was a brilliant session, ma'am. I must say, you have a lot of stories, and I would love to continue this, but I do not want to take up too much of your busy time because you're already doing so many lives and podcasts. And honestly, I enjoyed every part of it. I felt like this small kid with an elder. And you were telling me stories, and maybe I found you in the library or something, and you're telling me stories, and I'm listening ekdam aise with a khilkhila hua face. So I really enjoyed it, ma'am. Really, really appreciate you coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Thank you, Ayan. I really had a very nice time. I really enjoyed the conversation. And if even a little bit of a little speck of my whatever I have spoken does anything good, I would say that it's been worth every minute.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you have got a lifelong fan now, that is for sure. So yes, it's been a wonderful session here, ma'am, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. From your favorite flavor of ice cream to the most philosophical question about travel, it's been a lovely conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as well, and thank you so much for coming on. I hope to see you soon, maybe on another book release.
Yes,
And
sure.
yes, thank you so much for coming on the
Thank you,
show.
Anne. Thank you. And all the best to everyone out there.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you all loved the episode. Please go follow ma'am on Instagram. Her account name is Podar at Tanushree. You can find her on Instagram and Facebook. And stay updated about her books. Read her books. It's personal suggestion, which I don't do often. Please read her books. And yes, thank you so much, ma'am. And goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And that was the end of the episode with Tanushree Poddar. I hope you had a lovely time listening to us. Feel free to reach out to me on Instagram personally at the Pink Hatter, and follow Thy Book Box on Instagram for sure. And join our Discord community, which is full of fellow bookworms and nerds from all across the world, and it is really fun. I would personally recommend it. Lots of recommendations going on in this episode. Anyway, happy reading, stay safe, and thank you for listening to the pen that writes.